Flag salute will be led by Representative John Dallin.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The opening ceremony will be presented by Abiqua, I hope I pronounced that right, choir from Salem, the Abiqua Singers Choir of Kaiser, Silverton, and Salem, directed by Natalie Butler, and they are guests of Representative Vic Gilliam. That was beautiful. Thank you. Courtesies. Representative Dallum.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to introduce a couple from the Dalles. If you look up in the gallery up here, you will see John and Jackie Hasazumi. John is retired and serves as a historical society in the Dalles. He also owns a 1950 Chevrolet Fleetline, which I'm sure you'd like to see. Jackie volunteers at the Mid-Columbia Medical Center in the Dalles in LifeWorks and is a chaplain. She also helps in hospice work and teaches Reiki. Their son Kevin is an attorney with MD Van Valkenburg in the Dalles. John and Jackie got this trip at an auction, and I'd like you to extend courtesy of the house to John and Jackie Hasazumi.
Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. Colleagues, on the side aisle, come on up here. I would like to extend a special welcome to a young lady and her parents and her grandfather. This is Julie Drescher, and I'll tell you a little bit about her in a minute, and her parents, Dan and Jody Drescher, and her grandpa, Hub. I invited Julie and her parents and her grandfather here today to the Capitol to honor her after seeing her name mentioned in the paper, the newspaper, numerous times for her accomplishments. For a little background on Julie, she's currently a sophomore at St. Paul High School and has a cumulative GPA of 3.9. As if that didn't keep her busy enough, I found her being listed in the paper as being a winner for various awards in sports. Volleyball. She was on the all-tournament team, the Damascus Christian Tournament, all-tournament team, the Portland Christian Tournament, the Casco League first team. She was an all-state first team and player of the year and all-league most valuable player. And she's in basketball, and she was the most valuable player for the North Valley in a tournament. And she was a player of the year from the Costco League, and she was a first team in the all-state. She was a player of the year, unanimously chosen player of the year for the whole state in basketball in 1A. Her team awards include, of course, most valuable player and most offensive player. She led the St. Paul girls basketball to this year's all 1A state championship. She led the team in scoring, rebounding, steals, and assists. Then she goes to track. She's currently the 1A leader in jump, high jump at 5 feet 4 inches. This is also the fifth highest recorded jump at the 1A level in the history of the state of Oregon. She holds a St. Paul title, St. Paul High School record for high jump. She's a pole vaulter, member of the relay teams, plus she's a member of the Future Farmers of America, the Future Business Leaders of America, and her latest accomplishment as of last night, she was inducted into the National Honor Society, which is really pretty impressive. And that doesn't end it right there. She's involved with many community activities. She works for in the community for the St. Paul Catholic Church, the parish barbecue, which is excellent, by the way. It's a chicken barbecue, and there's various breakfasts and auctions that she's involved with. She's a charter member of the St. Paul Garden Club and is very active in the St. Paul Booster Club, works fundraisers such as concessions and parking, and she's a member of her youth life team youth group at St. Luke's Parish. Please give her and her family a grand welcome.
Very good to have you. Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wanted to welcome a couple of our honorary pages this morning. So if you'll stand when I say your name. Christine Vail from Portland, an eighth grader at Fernwood Middle School, a multi-sport athlete, and one of our honorary pages today. Thank you very much for being here. And Ellie Hoover, also an eighth grader at Fernwood Middle School in Portland, interested in drama and belongs to the choir, like social studies, hoping to be either a politician or actress and enjoys working with people. Thanks very much for being here.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, please welcome Dr. Rita Cavan, president of Lynn Benton Community College, from Albany to the House today. She's over here waving at us on the bar, and I don't think she holds a record for high jump, but she does a good job for us down there. Thank you.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wanted to, again, just recognize and thank the Abiquah singers over here in the side gallery for their beautiful singing this morning. We appreciate it very, very much. And in the group, Mr. Speaker, are some folks with the last name Butler. And so I want to make sure that we recognize the Butlers. If you're from Silverton and you don't know the Butler name, although we know the Butler name here on the floor, if you don't know the Butler name in Silverton, then we probably kind of doubt that you're from Silverton. But I want to particularly recognize Wes and Deborah Butler, who have been a great part of organizing Apple Pie Day today. And in their family, of course, Natalie, Holly, Marion, Jacqueline, and Andrew. I also want to recognize Philip and Bethany Butler. And last but not least, not a butler, Alyssa Cunningham, who's also with us and was one of the singers today. So please welcome them. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In the back gallery here, I'd like to have a family stand who are visitors from my district. And they are Christopher, Lindsay, Jonathan, Karen Lyons. They are from Clackamas. They're here today with the homeschoolers, I take it. And we're just delighted to have you. Please make them feel welcome. We hope you enjoy your day.
Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to welcome several honorary pages today. Please stand when I call your name. First is Quinn Reniker. Quinn is 13, an eighth grader at Fernwood Middle School. He likes to play baseball, and his career goal, he just wants to get a good job. That's excellent. Thank you, Quinn. Eileen Colmer. Eileen is 14. She's in also eighth grade at Fernwood Middle School. Eileen is involved in sports. She's not sure what her career goals are, but we're very glad to have her today. Hi, Eileen. Allie Bray. Allie is 14, also in eighth grade at Fernwood Middle School. Allie plays soccer, the guitar, tennis, and swimming. She likes French, literature, and math. She wants to be a lawyer, writer, or neurosurgeon. Max Zettbauer, hope I got that right, Max. Max is also in the eighth grade. He's 14 at Fernwood Middle School. He wants to be a marine biologist, engineer, or chef. Sophie Sweeney. Hi, Sophie. Sophie is 13, also at Fernwood Middle School. She loves to read and write. She wants to be a teacher or be involved in drama or advertising. And last one, Felicia Shakya. Felicia is 14 in the eighth grade. She likes drawing, music, and track, and she wants to be a doctor or surgeon. Welcome, everyone, and thank you for being here today. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If you could take your attention to the side aisle, I want to recognize Patricia Snyder from Grants Pass. She is a good friend, and she keeps Josephine County well informed. Thank you, Patricia.
Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's my pleasure to extend courtesies to the House to folks that are up in the South Gallery from the Oregon Association of Nurseries and other groups that have actively going to wave your hands up there. Other partner groups have worked actively on the metal theft bill that we'll be acting on later today. Welcome to the House.
Very good to have you. Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just wanted to welcome a couple of our honorary pages today. If you could please stand when I call your name. Ms. Leanne Weller. She's the daughter of Mary Weller. She attends Fernwood Middle School. She's interested in all sports, track and field especially, science and reading. And she's interested in being a computer tech, engineer, EMT, nurse, doctor, scientist, or researcher. And her favorite band is Snow Patrol. Ms. Virginia Keel. Virginia is the daughter of Kieran Keel, also at Fernwood Middle School. She's in the eighth grade. She's interested in volleyball, social studies, math, and literature. Would like to be an interior designer or lawyer. And her favorite musicians are the Rolling Stones and Tupac Shakur. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Amy, if you'd like to stand up, I'd like to introduce one of our honorary pages today from House District 19, Amy Hubble. Amy is a 17-year-old 11th grader, homeschooler, and her activities are a mile long, but I really have a favorite one she does. First of all, she's involved in 4-H. She's a swim coach, a swim instructor at the courthouse, so any of you that visit the courthouse and need swimming lessons or coaching, she's there for you to make you a better swimmer. And this is my special part that I love about Amy is she takes part in AKC competition with the American Kennel Club, loves dogs and dog agility, and also horses. But I have two black Labradors, and that's what she works with is black Labs, and one of mine has her junior title on it. And if you ever want to go hunting with me, as Representative Clem knows, you'll want a good dog. So Amy has career goals in that she's interested in owning her own business in actually doing horse and dog massage someday and probably some training to go with it. Amy, welcome, and we're excited to have you as part of our team today.
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to honor today Dallin Harmon, who is my legislative assistant. Tomorrow is his last day here. Dallin has been called to serve as a missionary for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. He is a great student, an honorable man, and is excited about sharing the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's been a joy to have him assist Peter and I in our office.
Representative Wiseman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have the honor of introducing a friend, an honorary page, Rosalinda, would you please stand? Corning. Rosalinda, I've known since she was 2, I believe. She's 12 years old, grade 6, from Bend. She attends Central Oregon Christian Homeschool. She takes part in speech club, choral, musical theater, Awana club, reading, 4-H, working on political campaigns, helping me. I've seen some of her 4-H award-winning projects. She's a great young lady, and she wants to be involved in drama and music, as well as serving a writing career. And I'd like to introduce her mother up in the upper balcony, if she'll stand up, another friend, and thank Lucy. Thank you.
Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It looks like we've got more pages than members today. But I would like to introduce one as well. On behalf of my good colleague from Tigard, I'd like to introduce Andrew Tolson. As I said, Andrew hails from Tigard. His mother, he is the son of Teresa Tolson. He's in the 9th grade, but he's homeschooled. And when he grows up, he wants to cash in the new evolving industry of game design. Welcome, Andrew.
Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I believe I have 2 pages that have arrived. Can we check to see if Vaughn and Scott have arrived? May I be recognized later if they're not here?
Absolutely. That'd be wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there further courtesies? Today is Representative Buckley's birthday. Happy birthday. And today is Representative Bill Garrard's birthday. Happy birthday, Bill. Further courtesies? Messages from the Governor.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the Governor to inform that he's approved to sign the following bill, House Bill 2007.
Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform that the Senate has passed Senate bills 823, 78, 154, 183, 296, 506, 595, 1042, adopted HCR 8 and SJM 8. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform that he has signed House Bill 3546.
First reading, memorials and resolutions.
SJM 8, urging Congress to enact legislation requiring testing, review, and approval of ingredients in cosmetics, personal care products, and toys.
Measure read first time. It passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Standing committee reports. Committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Special orders of business. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 3026, relating to metals.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 3026. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, colleagues. This has been coming for a long time. It's been dubbed the Metal Theft Bill. House Bill 3026 comes to you from the House Committee on Judiciary, where it received unanimous support. I think we all know that metal theft has become a serious issue in our communities, our state, and even throughout the nation. With the increase of supply and demand from China, we have seen the value of scrap metal tripling over the past 2 years. As a result, theft of metal has tripled as well. The majority of this criminal behavior is meth-driven. In order for us to deal with this serious issue, House Bill 3026A is being presented to you in an attempt to deal with the problem. The essence of this bill is to dry up the market for stolen metal. Last year, I was asked by Jeff Stone of the Oregon Association of Nurserymen to participate in a work group involving representatives from the agriculture, transportation, utilities, construction, metal recycling industries, and obviously law enforcement. The goal was to develop legislation that would address the concerns mentioned. House Bill 3026A restructures ORS 165.107, the failing to maintain metal purchase records statute. It makes several changes to the statute. It replaces the word person in the existing law with scrap metal dealer and provides a specific definition. It removes the existing requirements for a record and replaces these with the following: date and time of transaction, name of the person conducting the transaction for the dealer, general description of the property, a copy of the seller's license, the amount of consideration given. If over $100, a declaration by the seller that metal was not stolen. Video surveillance of the seller. And that's to be retained for 30 days. So there's a recycling process of every 30 days for the surveillance process. Vehicle license number of the seller. Additionally, it has a three strikes you're out component, or kind of. The first three convictions result in a $1,000 fine. The fourth fine jumps to $5,000. It's an unclassified violation, and there is no criminal aspect to this bill. House Bill 3026 applies the same rules for record keeping and fine system to pawn shops and secondhand dealers. And after much discussion, there is a uniformed support from all the stakeholders in support of this bill. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill, please.
To the bill.
Yeah, I'm proud to say I'm one of the chief sponsors on this bill. Mr. Stone asked me before the session started if I would help get this bill through, and I'm proud to stand up and speak with my friend from Albany about this. As a construction worker and contractor, I've been very aware of the problems of theft off of job sites, especially increasingly metals like brass and copper. But last night, I still sit on the Sunrise Water Authority Budget Committee, and they've experienced theft of meters because of the brass casing we talked about last night. Also, irrigators out in the hinterland having their irrigation heads hacked off their systems and gone. And these folks will go to great lengths to get recyclable metals to feed their habit. So it's a great bill. It's just one more tool in the box to fight meth. I urge your vote. Thank you.
Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Is that the right representative, or was it Representative Boone? It's me. Okay, thank you.
Sorry. Your mic's on. It's all yours.
All right, thank you. Mr. Speaker, I rise in strong support of this bill. I think it's an excellent tool to address two issues. One is fundamental protection of property rights in an area that we're not fundamentally protecting right now. And another area is our constant battle and struggle to win the war against drugs and specifically methamphetamines. I want to talk about a couple of issues of particular concern to me, but I want to read something that's just one of those nuggets that you stumble upon. I happen to find this Monday or Tuesday of this week. I won't mention what magazine I found it in because it would make the representative from Ashland and the representative from Northeast Portland blush. But I do want to read this. I think this is great. Miss America, 1944, was Venus Ramey of Kentucky, the first redhead to win the title. Now, aged 82, Ramey lives on a farm in her native state. The other day, Ramey, alerted by her dog, found an intruder in the act of stealing scrap metal from one of her storage buildings. The embarrassed but unrepentant thief said that if Ramey would just get out of his way, he would leave. Oh, no, you don't. Oh, no, you won't, declared the retired beauty queen. She thereupon pulled out a snub-nosed .38 and shot out the tire of the intruder's car, balancing on her walker for steady aim. The thief was subsequently arrested. I'm trying to live out a quiet, peaceful life and stay out of trouble, and all it is one thing after another, complained Ramey. We know the feeling, ma'am, but thanks for reminding us that on those inevitable occasions when trouble comes looking for you, a snub-nosed .38 can be very handy. Just one example of how prevalent this issue is, now, obviously not just in Oregon, but other places. Let me give a specific example of why when Jeff Stone came to me and said, hey, this is something I want you to look at, I jumped into it with both feet. My company, as most of you know, is a commercial construction company. We have been inundated by metals theft over the last several years. 3 years ago, when we were building our new building in Southeast Portland, we had $40,000 worth of theft within the building and lost several weeks out of our construction time schedule because of metals theft. It was our building, so we could live with that. Last year, in 2006, early in 2006, we were building a very fine cultural establishment in Jansen Beach. It's the new Hooters. And we had $25,000 worth of wiring and scrap metal stolen out of that particular project. The $25,000 is significant enough in its own right, Mr. Speaker, but it's the fact that it gave us a 3-week construction delay when we were trying to honor the grand opening of this particular establishment that was particularly troubling. And then last year as well, at our own yard, another metal theft person broke into our yard, stole several thousand dollars worth of metal, scrap metal tubing, copper, and whatnot. The great thing about this guy, though, was that he had bolt cutters. He broke into our back gate. It was Sunday morning, very early in the morning. The great thing was that we had remote cameras on the gate, and every time he would sort of turn around to see if anybody's looking, he was looking right into the camera. So it was wonderful. We sent that to the police. They ran it on the evening news that night, and the guy's in jail as we speak. The unifying element to all these examples, Mr. Speaker, is the fact that these people are stealing metal because the price of scrap metal has escalated, as the good representative from Happy Valley has demonstrated, has escalated significantly in the last few years. With overall construction costs, metal's been one of the leaders. It is something that's not well regulated right now when you go to turn that in. So these meth heads, these tweakers, dealers, whatever you call them, are stealing metal to feed their meth habit. That's all it is. They're not stealing it to buy bread. They're not stealing it to put on from one construction project to another. They're stealing it to buy meth. And so, Mr. Speaker, this bill is a wonderful bipartisan, multi-group, a lot of groups came together to make this happen. It's an excellent way to once again address and strengthen property rights and fight this battle against meth. I ask for your support.
Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill. I stand in complete support of this bill and appreciate the people who have spoken before. I want to bring this back to our last session a bit. You know, we passed a bill through a lot of work by a number of members here to put pseudoephedrine behind the counter and actually to have prescription. That led, I believe, to many of the mom-and-pop people who have the labs around unable to get the source going out of business. Good thing. However, that was how they used to feed their drug habit. So now we have another group of people who need to feed that habit with meth use. And lo and behold, the high price of metals, we have a whole new adventurous group going out to steal metals. In our area, with new construction going on for some of these homes, electricians can come back the next day and have everything ripped out of the new construction site and start all over. And that can happen repeatedly if they don't post people. So the cost of those constructions keeps going up. Affordable housing becomes harder and harder to afford for everybody because these costs have to be put into it. This is a simple bill. By regulating the people who collect this, giving us the aid to find out who are those people who are all of a sudden coming into copious amounts of non-ferrous metals. And I think if we are going to continue this path of making sure that we make it harder and harder for anyone to purchase or to provide meth, this is the next step we have to take. I urge your eye support.
Representative Giron.
Mr. Speaker, I will be brief. I stand in support of this bill as well. I've often talked about my district and how much I love my district. We have a real shortage of police officers, and because we have a shortage of police officers, we seem to have lately got an abundance of methamphetamine addicts. It's not uncommon in the agricultural sector to lose a whole field of sprinkler heads because they resell the brass. So please support this bill. It's probably the best bill that's come out for my district in this session.
Representative Clem.
To the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
Also, will stay brief. I'm a co-sponsor of the bill. I had originally met with one of my farmer buddies, and he was telling me about what had been happening on his farm. So I drew up another bill that would have dealt with this issue in some manners. Then I found out all this work had already been being done by a large group. So I sort of dumped my bill and got involved with this task force. And I just think it's a product of very good legislation. If you look at the letter in your bill files, all the groups involved, ag, district attorneys, co-ops, builders, it's really a product of what we should be doing more of, or getting the right folks in the right room, admitting there's a problem, solving it, and I would urge your eye support.
Representative Boone.
Well, everybody gave my speech already, so
I will just add that I had, and I've already lost it, but on the front page of a local paper in my district, one of the signs, the biggest sign for Carruthers Park, was stolen. And you don't think of things like that. You think about construction site and things like that and people's farmyards and things. But they took the sign, and they took the sign off a bridge, too. And these are expensive and very, you know, a lot of people spend money on them for one thing, but raise money for things like this, for commemorative signs. And it's just an additional nudge against, you know, our goodwill and everything. So good bill should pass. Please vote yes.
Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I, too, had been contemplating this bill since it has been a topic of discussion and a matter of concern within my North Clackamas Chamber and the member businesses. So knowing that this was coming forward, I thank very much the representative from Albany, the representative from Happy Valley, and all the others, because it is a huge concern. This is a day that we truly can celebrate some bipartisan successes. This is a very integral part in not only the meth epidemic, but I think the partnership with the metal recyclers was a very important part of this whole discussion as well. So I'm very excited about this bill and look forward to it being enacted, and this is a good day. I urge your support as well. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Olson, do you wish to close?
I do, Mr. Speaker. Good bill should pass.
Those who are in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? She votes aye. Representative Nelson? Representative Nelson is off the floor. House Bill 3026A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Propositions and motions. First reading of House bills. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 2435, relating to vehicle appraisal certificates. House Bill 2478, relating to building inspection program and declaring emergency. House Bill 2553, relating to child support and prescribing effective date. House Bill 2733, relating to individually identifiable health information. House Bill 2766, relating to alcoholic beverages. House Bill 2804, relating to Olympic Winter Games and declaring emergency. House Bill 2821, relating to combinations of vehicles. House Bill 2918, relating to health benefit plan, coverage of pervasive developmental disorder. House Bill 3047, relating to taxation for local public records. House Bill 3048, relating to surplus refunds and prescribing effective date. House Bill 3181, relating to family child care providers and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3314, relating to vehicular contact with vulnerable user of a public way and appropriating money. House Bill 3469, relating to water quality.
Bills read a second time or pass the third reading. Consent calendar. Clerk will read the bill in short summary.
Senate Bill 537, relating to address on Department of Transportation records, allows police officers to request that Department of Transportation use address of officer's employer instead of officer's residence address on records maintained by department.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 537. Those are the opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no, and the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kotek votes aye. Representative Berger votes aye. Representative Burley votes aye. Representative Nelson? Okay. Representative Nelson is off the floor. Representative Minnis, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just to be on the safe side, I think I need to declare a conflict of interest, perhaps. I'm married to a former police officer who's currently retired. So just to be on the safe side.
Well, your potential conflict is noted for the record.
Thank you.
Senate Bill 537, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. Clerk, read the bill.
House Bill 2118, relating to underground injection control program, appropriated money and declared an emergency.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2118B. Representative Burley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2118 allows the Department of Environmental Quality to institute a fee-based structure to support the existing underground injection control program in Oregon. The most common underground injection control systems in Oregon are stormwater dry wells. The federal government began the UIC program in 1974 as part of the Safe Drinking Water Act. DEQ assumed primary enforcement responsibility for Oregon's UIC program in 1984. Currently, the program's only funding comes from the EPA, which is only sufficient to support less than one full-time staff position. All state support for the program had been eliminated in previous biennia. During the interim, DEQ considered returning the program to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency due to the lack of funding. Those currently operating UICs wanted the Department of Environmental Quality to continue to operate the program and worked with DEQ to establish a fee schedule to support the UIC work. The revenue generated from the new fees in this bill are assumed in the budget for the DEQ. The Joint Ways and Means recommends HB 2118 be approved. And colleagues, during the committee hearings on this bill, and you'll see a floor letter to this effect, many, many people came and testified in support of this, including economic development, developers, home builders, cities, etc. And I also want to, just for your information, read a letter, or a part of a letter, dated January 26, 2007, to the chair of the House Committee on Energy and Environment. And this is from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, Region 10 in Seattle. And it says, if the UIC program is returned to EPA, federal implementation of the UIC program will likely be more enforcement-focused, relying on inspections and enforcement actions where appropriate to encourage compliance. Colleagues, I would submit to you that it's in our best interest and the state's best interest that we retain primacy of these EPA programs, and we do that by funding them rather than allowing them to go back to the EPA, where we have the federal government come in here and start regulating these things instead. So I urge your support for this vote. Thank you for this bill.
Further discussion? Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill?
To the bill.
Colleagues, currently the UIC is funded by the EPA. This new fee that's being added will raise more than $360,000 in the first biennium in excess fees, and it also adds six new positions in DEQ, and so when you begin to think of roll-up costs, you would want to consider that. I would urge a no vote.
Further discussion? Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill, please.
To the bill.
You know, water is a big issue in this state, and if we're going to start capturing excess flows in the wintertime and storing it underground for agriculture, commercial and residential use, we're going to have to fund the administrative side of this to make sure we're doing it right. We have to make sure that we have everything in place to take care of this kind of infrastructure in the future, because it's only going to become increasingly more contentious and increasingly more demanded here in the state of Oregon. It costs money to do this stuff. Water is important, it's essential, and I support things like the Oasis Project and a long list of other uses of water in this state, and I'd be a hypocrite if I voted no for this kind of administrative fee. I strongly urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Burley, do you wish to close?
Yes, Madam Speaker. I did want to touch on the fact that the projected revenues exceed expenditures by $361,000 and dollars, And that's for two reasons. One is that it's not entirely certain what the revenues are going to be, because until the folks come in for their permits for these UICs, it's not known for certain what the revenues are going to be. Secondly, the expenditures are a little bit higher, and what this allows for is that they're not going to be coming back looking for a fee increase in the near future, but instead will allow them to have some balance as the costs will surely roll up over the years. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilman, how do you vote? Representative Gilman? Off the floor. Representative Nelson, how do you vote? Representative Nelson, off the floor. Representative Wisnant, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Esquivel, how do you vote? Votes aye. And Representative Flores, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 2118B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2280, relating to public employee retirement.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2280A. Representative Esquivel.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2280A passed unanimously out of the Business and Labor Committee and was drafted on behalf of the PERS. The bill creates a current statutory provision that requires that employers who provide retirement plans for firefighters and police officers have their plans reviewed by PERS every 2 years to determine whether the employer is providing retirement benefits equal to or better than what is provided by the Oregon Public Service Retirement Plan. The mandatory review creates an unnecessary cost to employers. House Bill 2280A establishes that the PERS board shall execute such reviews at times as may be established by rule at the expense of the public employer. The measure also adds an amendment that ensures that police officers and firefighters with alternative retirement pension plans receive a comparable level of benefits as provided to PERS members. Under the measure, a public employer is not required to participate in PERS if the board determines that the employer provides retirement benefits that are equal to or better than benefits that are provided to equivalent PERS employee classes. If the employer does not provide sufficient benefits, the PERS board must require those employees to become PERS members within 180 days after the determination is made, unless the employer modifies the employee's current retirement plan to provide benefits that are equal to or better than benefits provided to the equal class of PERS members. There are currently 10 public employers who have police officers or firefighters that are covered under the equal or better retirement plan. This bill has no physical impact on PERS, and the agency's intent is to require the review when these types of retirement plans change retirement plan benefits. I urge your yes vote.
Further discussion, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I've been asked by some local government folks to read a few things into the record here, just for clarification. While the multi-class review required by House Bill 2280A in gross increases the complexity and cost of the review of each of the 10 local government pension plans for police and fire employees, this bill also changes what triggers a review of these local pension plans. I think the increase comment in that may be debatable, but I promised I'd read it in anyway. Under HB 2280A in gross, these local government pensions plans will no longer be automatically subjected to a review every 2 years. Instead, there will only be a review when a local government changes those local pension plans benefits that are required to be equal or to or better than the retirement benefits provided to the equivalent class of employees under PERS. If the local government does not change those equal to or better than local pension plan benefits, the local pension plan will not be subjected to a review. If the local government does not change those equal to or better than local pension plan benefits, the local government will not incur the expense of the more costly and complex review required by HB 2280. I'm not necessarily convinced that it will be more expensive. The point here is, if the local government chooses to change their plan, then the trigger will be reviewed. They will know the review will be triggered, but they will no longer be mandated to do it every 2 years. So, thank you very much.
Further discussion, Representative Minnis.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
Representative, in these reviews, is it possible that in the future, that if benefits change, would it only apply to those that retire after a certain date, or would it be retroactive to retirees, people that have already retired?
Clarification of the question.
I just need to know.
Clarification.
I yield. Just need to know if in a review, if it would impact people that are currently retired, or if it would be prospective people that are going to retire. If I'm trying to figure out if I need to do a conflict of interest announcement.
My interpretation, Representative, is that it would not affect people that are already retired.
All right. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Esquivel, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Wisnant, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Girard, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 2280A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2498, related to construction work on existing structures.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2498A. Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2498 is brought to us by the Oregon Association of Realtors. It passed unanimously from the Consumer Protection Committee. This bill allows people to buy existing homes, hire licensed contractors to fix them up, and then put the homes back on the market for sale. This is providing a substantial benefit to consumers of residential housing by using their capital to improve the quality of existing housing. Under current law, those people who fix up houses and resell them are defined as contractors. And so under current law, they'd have to be licensed by the Construction Contractors Board, even if they don't do the work themselves, but hire licensed contractors to do that work. Actually, many individuals don't know about that law and are in violation of it, despite the fact that their activities are providing a community benefit. And the way this bill addresses that issue is to not require this Construction Contractors Board license for the owner of existing homes as long as the owner is arranging for the work to be done. It is limited to 4 homes per year. So all actual work on the home must be done by licensed contractors. This bill does not allow the owners to do the work themselves, nor does it allow for unlicensed individuals to arrange for new homes to be built. It requires a general contractor to be used if the work requires a building permit. This will increase the supply of rehabilitated and renovated homes, which should lead to them becoming more available and hopefully more affordable. So please support House Bill 2498A. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Bonamici, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Madam Speaker.
She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Butler, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 2498A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2704, relating to fuel-efficient driving techniques.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2704A. Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2704A is a very simple bill that allows Department of Motor Vehicles to include questions on the driver's test related to fuel-efficient driving. And you know, this is important because by following fuel-efficient driving techniques, drivers can save as much as 50% in their gas mileage, or increase their gas mileage by as much as 50%. These techniques include things like observing the speed limit, avoiding excessive idling, removing excessive weight from the car, using cruise control, using overdrive gears, doing regular maintenance. This bill would simply permit the Department of Motor Vehicles to include questions in its test related to these. They would also be in the manual that prospective drivers receive before they take the test. This bill is really about ultimately saving money for drivers, improving the environment, and reducing America's dependence on foreign oil. If American drivers increase their fuel efficiency by only 15%, well within what's achievable by following these techniques, we could cut our foreign imports of oil by nearly a billion barrels per year, and that's just by increasing efficiency 15%. So I think that while we look at incentives and while we look at mandates and we look at changing where we get our fuel from, we should also be looking very closely at conservation and encouraging Oregon drivers to move in that direction. I encourage your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'll be a no vote on this bill. I think that this is a great example of mission creep, and that I would think that the residents of Oregon would be much better served by having the department focus on safety rather than fuel efficiency. And to think that we'd be taking questions off that test that help designate or find out whether people could drive in a safe manner and not be a risk, and substitute questions about whether they would be fuel efficient drivers, is not a good direction for the department to go on. I urge your no vote on this bill.
Further discussion? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. I'm sure I'll be an aye vote on this. My question is the department prevented now? This is a good focus, but are they prevented from putting those questions on there?
Thank you for the question, Representative. The department is not prevented by statute from including these questions, and in fact, they've indicated their willingness to consider this. I think by passing this statute, we would send a message to the department that we as a body think that it's important at least to consider adding these types of questions. This bill would not require them to add those questions, and they are unopposed to this because they believe it allows them to retain their discretion with respect to what questions will be included and what will not. But I do think it's valuable for our body to send a message to Oregon drivers that fuel efficient techniques are important.
Further question.
Additional question. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. And would you comment on the previous representative's comment about supplanting safety questions for conservation questions?
Yeah, thank you, Representative. Again, it is permissive, and I think if the department felt that there were safety questions that were absolutely so important that they should not be eliminated from the test, there's nothing in here that would require them to remove those questions. The driver's manual and the driver's test contain a whole range of questions, many of them regarding safety, many of them regarding, you know, highway speeds, the rights of pedestrians, the rules of the road. And this would simply add a possible question to their toolkit that can be included on some tests.
Further discussion? Representative Cannon, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Cameron, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Richardson, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Maurer, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 2704A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and House Bill 3241 be carried over to its proper place on the Wednesday, May 16, 2007, third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3369, relating to local public safety.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3369A. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. House Bill 3369 is about local public safety coordinating councils, or as some people refer to them, LPSCCs. We used to call them PSCCs back at home. Local public safety coordinating councils have been working since 1997 to help better organize our local public safety systems. I had the privilege of serving on my local public safety coordinating council in Lane County to observe and to participate firsthand in the benefits of collaborative work, interagency discussion, and the cross-pollination that goes on when different agencies work together. As a state representative, I'd like to help the local councils, or LPSCCs, to achieve even greater potential. Collaboration, such as the kind that local PSCCs can enable, can lead to improved service and to cost-effective solutions. Collaboration spurs creative ideas for joint projects and new ways of doing business. In this building, we often call on collaboration as a way to squeeze more out of less and to get even better results with resources that don't keep pace with increasing demands. Public safety is the third largest expense for the state, behind education and human services. In the criminal justice system, there are separate jurisdictions at different levels of government with parallel and overlapping responsibilities, and the activities of each can directly impact the work or results of the other agency. County sheriffs and jails, city police, parole and probation, district attorney, judges, and public defenders, and casting an even wider net, the collaboration or the overlaps continue. Youth advocates, mental health providers, elected and appointed officials, advisory groups, and nonprofit organizations. This network could function with fantastic results if it was designed as a criminal justice system. But it can also be a tangled labyrinth and not operate as a single system. Without coordination, these agencies can develop programs that are unrelated to each other and sometimes even at cross purposes. It seems ironic that they should be working together, but often they're at cross purposes, and sometimes they're competing against each other for the same public money and for community donations. Lawmakers thought it was important to get the criminal justice system components working together better, so important that in the 1970s, the legislature codified this principle of collaboration as a directive in ORS 423.560. That statute is the one that set up these public safety coordinating councils, so we, the legislature, created them. LPSCCs were established with the task of helping to organize and coordinate activities and policy among the different entities and to provide recommendations for more efficient and effective use of our resources. The law provides some instructions for who should be at the table, but it provides little other administrative or organizational demands or advice. These local councils have been meeting. They've been thinking of good ideas, they've been brainstorming, and at times they've been even reinventing systems. Good things are happening, but not uniformly around the state. LPSCCs can lapse into a dormant state. Some of them can lapse into a situation where they're not meeting, or vacancies on these councils can go unfilled for quite some time. Sometimes the ideas that are developed aren't or can't be put into motion. But the LPSCC members and the public are left wondering whatever became of that idea, whatever became of fill in the blank. So to provide more transparency in government and to close the loop, it would be good for the public to know what became of those recommendations. A simple letter summarizing the outcomes would provide that follow-up. This bill provides a little more instruction, and frankly, it provides a little nudge to those councils where they need a little nudge when they're stalled. The concepts in this bill benefited from the advice that I got from public agency staff, from local elected officials, and from Criminal Justice Commission representatives. As the bill was being considered by the Judiciary Committee, several people with a county perspective helped me to clarify and tighten the bill to ensure that the demands on counties were not onerous. This bill has three objectives. To help LIPSIX operate at full strength by requiring vacancies to be filled as soon as possible. To close the loop and report back, counties would report once a year, responding to the recommendations, and to report back to the legislature. The Criminal Justice Commission does make a regular report, so a description of the work of the LIPSIX would provide a little additional information to us to know how our own statute is being implemented. The statute enabling public safety coordinating councils is a mandate for continuous improvement. It's a terrific idea. LIPSIX can make things happen that wouldn't happen otherwise. This bill is pretty simple and straightforward. It uses systems that are already in place. It follows procedures that the legislature already requests from other boards and commissions and agencies. So I would appreciate your support, as well as a pat on the back for helping our LIPSIX perform efficiently and to give a little encouragement to those who need the encouragement. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Girard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the bill.
To the bill.
As a former county commissioner, this is would not be interpreted as a pat on the back. I would resent the intrusion into what is a domain of local government in which the state has no real reason to be mandating any kind of reports. These people who work on these commissions are volunteers, and this bill will simply create more work and mandate more cost to the counties who are already heavily burdened in these areas. So we just don't need any more mandated paperwork from this Salem bureaucracy. Vote no on this bill.
Further discussion? Representative Nathanson, do you wish to close?
Very briefly, thank you, Madam Speaker. Yes, to the good representative, there was some discussion about does this constitute a mandate, a further mandate or imposition to counties. The request is pretty much just a simple letter saying what recommendations were implemented and what recommendations were not. It's one of those issues of transparency. The local public safety coordinating councils already provide the recommendations. The Criminal Justice Commission already provides a report to the legislature, so I think the intrusion is extremely minimal, but we would like to help those LIPSICs become even more effective where they're requesting a little help to be more effective. I think this is this bill has been the result, the amendments in the bill have been the result of listening to the counties and some concerns that we heard, and I believe that the work we did to amend the bill did help tighten it and reduce anything that might be called too much of an additional burden on counties. So I hope that it addresses the majority of the concerns, and I encourage your vote. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Gilliam? Votes no. Representative Cowan, how do you vote? votes aye. And Representative Roblin, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would request to change my vote from aye to nay, and also to notify that I ask for a reconsideration.
Representative Roblin changes his vote from aye to nay and serves notice of possible reconsideration. House Bill 3369A, having failed to receive the constitutional majority, is declared failed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3407, relating to public records.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3407A. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I bring you House Bill 3407A today, and it's about protecting those who protect our citizens. House Bill 3407A exempts from disclosure unless the public interest requires otherwise the home address and telephone numbers and voter registration records of those who serve in our public safety system, including district attorneys, deputy district attorneys, and public safety officers. We heard a lot of testimony about this as being one step, obviously, to help those who put people away for things that have been done and later come out in their new life and potentially try to track down those who maybe were part of that prosecution. And this is one thing that would help try to protect those people. So today I urge your aye vote on House Bill 3407A.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Cameron, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Tomei, how do you vote? Representative Burley votes aye. Representative Tomei votes aye. Representative Beyer votes aye. House Bill 3407A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3515, relating to crime.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3515A. Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move that House Bill 3515 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative McPherson moves that House Bill 3515 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. To your motion.
Colleagues, House Bill 3515 does create a couple of new crimes relating to Internet predators. It was designed so that it would have a minimal impact on our incarceration rate, however, because the penalties were not elevated above what an existing attempt crime is. But because of the need to make sure that that's the case, we're going to take it to Ways and Means so that we can affirm that before it comes back to the floor. So I urge you to support this motion.
Further discussion? Representative McPherson, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that House Bill 3515 should be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means will say aye, and those opposed, no. The motion, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. House Bill 3515 is referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3537, related to taxation of a nonprofit corporation retail stores operating for the purposes of funding low-cost housing programs and prescribing an effective date.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3537. Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, good bill, good purpose.
House Bill 3537 exempts from taxation real and personal property of retail stores owned by nonprofit entities if the retail store deals exclusively in donating inventory and the proceeds from the store sales are used to financially support a not-for-profit housing program. Under current law, all real and personal property, including inventory of a retail store dealing exclusively in donated inventory, is exempt if the entities distribute inventory without cost as part of a welfare program or uses the proceeds from the sale of inventory to support a welfare program. The definition of a welfare program includes providing food, shelter, clothing, or health care to needy persons without charge. Representative Burley and I received a letter from Allison Hamm, who works at the Bend Habitat for Humanity resale property tax property or resale store. She discovered that Oregon Revised Statute 307.130 removes the property tax exemption that they had been receiving at their resale operation. Mrs. Allison Hamm was a good citizen. She described how we solved this. If the definition of welfare program changed from providing of food, shelter, clothing, or health care, including dental services, to needy persons without charge, we change that to without profit, then Habitat for Humanity would qualify. Mr. David Love, executive director of the Bend Habitat, said this would probably save their operation about $10,000 a year that they could provide more affordable homes in Bend, Oregon. I think this is a right bill, good thing to do to help with affordable housing. So I would urge your yes vote on this.
Further discussion? Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question to the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, ma'am.
He does.
I apologize for not getting this question to you sooner, Representative. I just noticed some of the particular parts of this bill, and I'm wondering if there was discussion in committee about whether or not this covered goodwill.
Thank you for the question, good representative. That goodwill was already covered. I was not a member of that committee revenue that did that. You might want to ask the chair of the revenue, but I think goodwill is already exempt.
Is the chair of revenue available to answer my question?
Redirect your question.
Thank you.
Representative Barnhart, do you yield?
I do. I would need a repeat of the question.
He does, and would the questioner please repeat her question?
Here it is, Bill. Here.
Representative Tomei?
He's listening. Representative, thank you. I just, as committee chair, I was wondering if you remembered if there was discussion in committee about whether or not this bill covers goodwill.
No, the committee discussion did not include a discussion of goodwill.
So there was no discussion about
additional question
to the
Representative Barnhart, do you yield?
Yes.
He does.
So there was no discussion about the CEO salary of goodwill?
Not in connection with this bill, no.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Wisnett, do you wish to close?
Just a couple of comments, Madam Speaker, that I think this is good and it will help affordable housing. I think we should keep that focus on that. Habitat for Humanity has support by a lot of the members in this body, and it's good for our communities. Please vote yes.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gelster, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Butler, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Barker, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Burley, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Votes aye. And Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 3537, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. The clerk will read the chair requests unanimous consent that Senate Concurrent Resolution 8 be made a special order of business at 11:30 a.m. today. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the next resolution.
SCR 9, in memoriam, Carl F. Flipper III, 1948 to 2006.
The question now arises upon third reading and final adoption of Senate Concurrent Resolution 9. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Carl F. Flipper III moved to Portland, Oregon in 1991, where he served at Lewis and Clark College as Director of Business Development Center and as an Assistant Professor of Business. Mr. Flipper earned a BA in Economics and an MBA in Marketing and Finance at the University of Illinois, and was a valuable resource to the Oregon business and education sectors, teaching business courses at Concordia University, Portland State University, and Portland Community College. From 1997 through 2000, Mr. Flipper was trade and economic advisor for the state of Oregon, creating opportunities for cultural exchange, trade, and tourism with Africa. He was actively involved in the Oregon Public Broadcasting and the Portland Baseball Group and served as a consultant with the Oregon Native American Business and Entrepreneurial Network. Mr. Flipper was greatly involved in and enriched his community by serving as president of the Buffalo Soldier Historical Society, president of the Oregon Enterprise Forum, president of the National Association of Advancement of Colored People, Portland Chapter, and chair of the Troop Committee with Boy Scout Troop 10. Mr. Flipper was the great-grandson of the brother of Henry O. Flipper, the first African-American to graduate from West Point and the first African-American officer to command the Buffalo Soldiers. A longtime activist in Portland's Humboldt neighborhood, Mr. Flipper passed away on November 24, 2006 from complications of a long-standing disease. SCR 9 states that we, the members of the 74th Legislative Assembly, urge all Oregonians to commemorate Carl F. Flipper III for his great achievements throughout his life as an individual who dedicated his life to the memory of his granduncle in helping others and human rights.
Further discussion? Representative Shields.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I appreciate the good representative from Med for bringing this forward. Carl Flipper was truly a jewel in my district in North and Northeast Portland. We both grew up in St. Louis and had some stories to tell amongst ourselves about that. And Carl was the executive director of the Humboldt Neighborhood Association right at the height of the crack epidemic. And he was one who, like me, has no sympathy for drug dealers, feeling that they were scourges, certainly, on our community. But he was always willing, if somebody was going to stop, if somebody was going to get clean and sober, he was always there to offer the hand of redemption to bring them back up. And my district will truly miss him. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Esquivel, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Concurrent Resolution 9, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. The clerk will read the next resolution.
SCR 11, in memoriam, Judge Clifford L. Freeman, 1944 to 2006.
The question now arises upon third reading and final adoption of Senate Concurrent Resolution 11. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Colleagues, Judge Freeman, Multnomah County Circuit Judge Clifford Freeman, was born in 1944. He earned an undergraduate degree in economics, a master's degree in education, and a law degree from the University of Oregon. He served as a felony trial attorney for the Metropolitan Public Defender's Office from 79 to 88, and then as pro tem juvenile court referee for Multnomah County before he was appointed to the bench in 1996. Judge Freeman was one of the driving forces behind the development of Multnomah County's community court project that brought courtrooms into the neighborhoods to handle crime that were not considered high profile. And he was the first judge to preside over the Northeast Community Courts, based at the King County neighborhood, the King Neighborhood Facility in Northeast Portland. As presiding judge of the Northeast Community Court, he found ways that defendants could aid the community as part of their sentence. Judge Freeman was known to his colleagues as personifying the qualities of a good judge, a good public servant, and a mentor to those that he came in contact with. Senate Concurrent Resolution 11 calls for the members of the 74th Legislative Assembly to extend our deepest sympathies to the family of Judge Clifford L. Freeman, those friends, and all those persons whose lives he greatly affected. We were saddened by his early loss as a fairly young age in 2006. Please join me in honoring this man.
Further discussion, Representative Shields.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, and I thank the good representative for bringing this forward, too. The Northeast Community Court was in my district, and Judge Freeman was a big supporter of the organization that I founded called Better People. And it was not uncommon for to see Judge Freeman in the office of Clarina Boston, who was our enrollment specialist, our recruiter of clients, because we had a $25 enrollment fee in our program for recovering addicts and people who were on probation and parole. And if a client couldn't afford that, Judge Freeman would actually come over to our office, reach into his pocket, and pay the difference between what the client could afford and what was required for the $25 enrollment fee. I think that level of community service, Madam Speaker, was incredible, and he treated all of the clients with dignity and respect, but he was very sure to create proper boundaries to help addicts and offenders change their behavior, and we commemorate his life. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the resolution.
To the resolution.
Colleagues, for the past decade or so, I've been a volunteer court tour guide taking students on tours of the Multnomah County Courthouse. There are some judges who over the years have been exceptionally welcoming, pleased to have students in their courtroom, and Judge Freeman was one of those judges. His service in Multnomah County was exceptional, and he will be sorely missed. I'm honored that we are able to pass this resolution today, honoring his life and work. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Berger, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. All members have voted. Senate Concurrent Resolution 11, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Clerk will read the next resolution.
SCR 12, in memoriam, Abdul Halim Rishan, 1943 to 2006.
The question now arises upon third reading and final adoption of Senate Concurrent Resolution 12A. Representative Barker.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the resolution.
To the resolution.
This is kind of a nostalgic day for me. I'm saying goodbye to a couple of my high school friends here. Judge Clifford Freeman attended Benson High School with me, and Halim Ersan attended Benson High School, later transferring to Jefferson, where he graduated in 1961. When he was at Benson, he was Bill Cross, Jr., and a fine young man. He worked hard. He was a boxer. Even as a young man, he was a big kid. And we used to do a lot of horseplay, as kids are wont to do, and try to occasionally sneak a punch in on each other. And one time he got me with a kidney punch that actually knocked me out, and he felt a lot worse about it than I did. I thought it was kind of funny, but he was went on to box and, in fact, was trying out for the Olympics as a heavyweight and lost in the quarterfinals to Jerry Corey, who went on to be quite a professional boxer. After graduating from high school, Halim went into the Army and was honorably discharged. He attended Southern Illinois University and Lewis and Clark College, where he received numerous awards. He boxed out of the Knott Street Community Center in Portland, and which was a great neighborhood resource for Portland's African-American community over the years. In 2005, he's inducted to the Oregon Sports Hall of Fame. When he transferred to Jefferson, he continued being a great citizen there, and he played football with one of my brother-in-laws. And during his lifetime as an adult, he fought for justice in Portland's, primarily in Portland's black community, especially emphasizing on education. He worked for fair housing. He worked to see that the police were doing a good job and not being brutal. He, at one point, he worked for the Job Corps, and he was like the barracks leader, and he helped instill in these young people who in the Job Corps often came from hard times, hard circumstances, and he really worked hard to see that they learned about personal responsibility. I was shocked when I read in the obituaries of the Oregonian, what I call the Irish sports pages, when I saw his name show up there, I was saddened. He was a great young man. Well, he wasn't so young anymore. He's my age. But he died too young. This resolution resolves that the 74th Legislative Assembly expresses condolences to his family, and I surely encourage your aye vote on this.
Further discussion? Representative Barker, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Garrard, how do you vote? Representative Garrard? Off the floor. Senate Concurrent Resolution 12A, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Representative Kremel, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Request to go back to courtesies.
Representative Kremel requests unanimous consent to temporarily return to the order of courtesies. Is there objection? Seeing none, please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would like to draw the body's attention to a group of State Farm agents that are up in the gallery. There they are. They're waiting. Okay. This is Jerry Thatcher and Debbie Parker from Wilsonville, and they have four others with them today, and they are touring the Capitol, and I just wanted to make them feel very welcome. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Welcome to the Capitol. Enjoy your day here. Further courtesies? The clerk will read the next resolution.
SCR 14, commemorating South Lane School District Superintendent Kristen Parent upon being named National Superintendent of the Year.
The question now arises upon third reading and final adoption of Senate Concurrent Resolution 14. Representative Dellum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Krista Parent is from Representative Hanna's district, and normally the honor would be given to him to introduce Krista. Both he and I have been anxiously looking for her. But I am very pleased that I am able to bring you Senate Concurrent Resolution number 14. The resolution recognizes Krista Parent as the National Superintendent of the Year, as well as her school district, South Lane School District. In my 25 years as a superintendent, I was privileged to know two other recipients of this honor. One of them was a very close personal friend, and the other I grew to know when I moved to Portland, or to Oregon, pardon me. And I can assure you, when the American Association of School Administrators winnows administrators to only one, that one is a special kind of superintendent. I did not know Krista until just a few months ago, but I can tell you from talking with her that the AASA, American Association of School Administrators, has deemed her one of the best, and I will concur that she certainly is. It is indeed an honor for me to ask you to support Krista and her school district by passing SCR 14. Thank you very much.
Further discussion? Representative Dellum, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system.
Representative Berger, how do you vote? She votes aye. Representative Shields? Representative Shields votes aye. Speaker votes aye. Senate Concurrent Resolution number 14, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next resolution.
SCR 15 in memoriam of Judge Mercedes Diaz, 1917 to 2005.
Question now arises upon final reading and adoption of Senate Concurrent Resolution 15. Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, it is my great honor to bring you Senate Concurrent Resolution 15, which honors a remarkable woman, Judge Mercedes Diaz. Judge Diaz was truly a trailblazer and a role model to many, many people, and we are honoring her with this resolution. She became the first black female lawyer in Oregon when she was admitted to the bar in 1960 and became the first woman of color to become a judge in Oregon when she was appointed as a district court judge in 1969. She was elected as a Multnomah County Circuit Court judge, defeating seven male challengers for the position, and in addition to these things, she became an advocate for youth, spending much of her time on the bench presiding over family law cases. She also served on the Governor's Committee on Children and Youth and the Metropolitan Youth Commission. And she was a founding member of the National Association for Women Judges and a founding board member of the Oregon Women Lawyers, and in addition was active in several professional organizations, including the National Bar Association, the Oregon Minority Lawyers Association, and the O&M Panner American Inn of Court. She was a teacher. She taught trial techniques at Harvard Law School as a Woodrow Wilson Visiting Fellow. And her colleagues state that she exemplified the qualities that make the very best lawyers: common sense, practicality, a quick wit, decisiveness, compassion, concern for the community, and an abiding love and respect of the law. I was honored to be able to meet her, and she truly was not only a remarkable professional, a role model, but also a very warm and caring and remarkable person. And so, as the resolution says, we, the members of the 74th Legislative Assembly, mourn the passing of Judge Mercedes Diaz and honor her lifelong dedication to her community and to the legal profession.
Very honored to bring Senate Concurrent Resolution 15 before you and look forward to its passage. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to the resolution.
To the resolution.
It's amazing to me in our lifetime how we're all brought together for different reasons. And I'm so glad that this resolution is brought today because both Senator Betsy Johnson and I had the opportunity to share the honors with this wonderful judge when Oregon had the Oregon Women of Excellence program, and she certainly was.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Rosenbaum, you wish to close. She has not. Those opinion the resolution should pass will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no, and the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Beyer? Votes aye. Representative Barker? Representative Barker is off the floor. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? He votes aye. And Representative Krieger? Representative Krieger? Representative Krieger is off the floor. Senate Concurrent Resolution 15, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next resolution.
SCR 16, in memoriam of Judge Roosevelt Robinson.
Question now arises upon final reading and adoption of Senate Concurrent Resolution 16. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It is an honor for me from our Rules Committee to have the opportunity to carry this, and I thank Senator Gordley for bringing these resolutions to our attention. Judge Roosevelt Robinson passed away August 4th, 2004. He was appointed as Multnomah County Circuit Court Judge in 1995 and was one of two African Americans among the Multnomah County County's 37 Circuit Court Judges. He was a founding member of the Association of Oregon Black Lawyers and as an alumnus of Lewis and Clark Law School was a co-founder of the Lewis and Clark Law School's Minority Law Students Association. Judge Robinson worked tirelessly to increase the number of minority lawyers in Oregon. A scholarship was established in his honor at his alma mater, Lewis and Clark Law School, to provide financial assistance to minority students. He acted as a mentor in countless lives, professionally, personally, and academically, especially at his alma mater, Lewis and Clark Law School. SCR 16 calls for the members of the 74th Legislative Assembly to mourn the passing of Judge Roosevelt Robinson and honor his countless contributions to his community and to his fellow citizens. I urge your support.
Further discussion, Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to the resolution.
To the resolution.
Thank you, colleagues. I again rise in support of a resolution honoring the work of a Multnomah County Circuit Court judge. In my many years as a court tour guide, Judge Robinson had, unfortunately, one of the smaller courtrooms in the Multnomah County Courthouse, but students used to squeeze together on the benches just to be in there to watch him preside. He was smart, he was welcoming, and the students learned so much from watching him preside over a case. I urge your support of this resolution honoring his life and work. Thank you.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution.
To the resolution.
I, too, would like to add my voice to those who honor Judge Robinson. I had the opportunity to meet him more than once at the Oregon Black Political Convention and found him to be truly a remarkable person who was always encouraging and welcoming to people who were running for office, whether they be judicial candidates or in any other capacity, and he just was really a great guy. And I also want to say that this is the last of a group of resolutions that came to you from our Elections, Ethics, and Rules Committee. And I think you can see from these wonderful life stories that these were a remarkable group of people. And I join my colleague in thanking Senator Gordley for bringing these before us. I think it is a tribute that we are able to honor these remarkable individuals today.
Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Judge Robinson, like Judge Freeman...
To the resolution.
Judge Robinson, like Judge Freeman, also worked with the community court and took great interest in seeing that people who were in recovery from addiction had a second chance to change their lives around. What struck me about him as well is that he had the utmost respect for jury service. And whenever somebody showed up for jury service in his courtroom, he always wrote them a thank you letter. Now, you can imagine how busy judges are, but for him to take time to send a personal thank you letter really speaks volume about his view of public service and about the need for all of us to take part in our criminal justice system. So I also appreciate Senator Gordley bringing this forward. Several of these resolutions that we're talking about passed on the Senate side earlier on April 4th, I believe, when we celebrated the public accommodations law passing more than 50 years ago. And Representative Minnis, incidentally, had commemorated that with a fine picture in this building. And so, again, I thank you all for joining me in commemorating the lives of these great Oregonians. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Rowland, do you wish to close? Representative Rowland, do you wish to close?
No, thank you. Thank you.
Those opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no, and the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? He votes aye. Senate concurrent resolution, having received the 16, having received constitutional majority, is declared adopted. Clerk, read the next resolution.
SGR 21, designated month of March and each year as Brain Injury Awareness Month.
The question now arises upon final reading and adoption of Senate Joint Resolution 21. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's my pleasure to bring this bill, to carry this bill. It comes to you from your Committee on Human Services and Women's Wellness. I appreciate very much the chair of the committee, Representative from Milwaukee, allowing me to carry this bill. Two or three folks that I would like to particularly highlight before we vote on the bill. The first is my predecessor, and the guy who we mourn this week, Mac Sumner. Mac worked hard with the folks at the Brain Injury Association of Oregon to get this bill in order and on the floor today, and I appreciate that very much. It's my pleasure to inherit this bill. The other person is another former representative from our district, Tootie Smith, who serves on the board of the Brain Injury Association of Oregon. And lastly, I want to make sure that we recognize Sherry Stock, who's the executive director and founder of the Brain Injury Association of Oregon. Sherry has worked very hard, has experienced this trauma in her own life, and has turned it into something very positive, and I think we owe a great deal of gratitude to her. We've passed the month of March, obviously, so we won't be able to celebrate this should it pass until next month. But this bill, Senate Joint Resolution 21, designates the month of March in each year as Brain Injury Awareness Month. Mr. Speaker, if I could, I'd like to highlight a couple of facts about traumatic brain injury that I think are that is worthy of our attention this morning. Of course, this affects Oregonians and Americans of all ages, but I just want to tell you a little bit about what it does. An estimated number of brain injuries to kids from birth to 14 years, just that segment of our population. We estimate next year there will be 2,685 deaths, 33 in Oregon, that there will be 37,000 hospitalizations due to traumatic brain injury. About 500 of those will be Oregonians. And lastly, there are 435,000 emergency department visits for this injury, and we're going to have about 6,000 of those in Oregon. On the bright side, if there is one, is that this is one of the injuries to the head and brain that can be prevented. So I've got a couple of precautions and rules here that I'd like to direct specifically to a few of my colleagues. So I hope that they're listening carefully. First of all, to my friend from Ashland, the representative from Ashland, a good friend of mine from Ashland. Oh, there he is now. And I want to be sure that he understands that when we talk about traumatic brain injury, that you can prevent it by wearing a seatbelt and having airbags in your car, no matter how fast your car goes, from your house to 90 miles to the racetrack or wherever it may be. To my friend from the center of Portland, I want to make sure that my friend from the center of Portland understands that it's important that my friend from the center of Portland understands that we can prevent brain injury by buckling children into a safety seat, booster seat, or seat belt, depending on the child's age. I thought that would be of interest to you. And lastly, to my friend from Northeast Portland in Maywood Park, I won't even look to see if she's listening, wear a helmet when you're riding a bike or during sports activities, including skateboarding, skiing, baseball, and football. Okay, there's one more. To my friend from Central and East Salem, wherever he may be, we also call him, give me another clip, Clem. You can prevent traumatic brain injury by locking up firearms and bullets. Mr. Speaker, those are just some of the tips that we can prevent this incredibly serious traumatic brain injury situation, and I hope that you will join me in supporting this measure.
Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I have the unfortunate experience to have had quite a bit of experience with people who have received brain injuries due to motor vehicle accidents. And as it says in the resolution, the only cure for brain injury is prevention. And you just can't even know. Even people who are not so profoundly affected still are, because their personalities change, and it changes their whole life. So please, please vote for this. This is very important.
For the discussion of the resolution, Representative Clem.
Mr. Speaker, a question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, I do.
He does.
Could you talk to me about the effect of meteorites falling down? What would help with prevention in that regard?
Thank you for that question. In all cases, wear a helmet.
Additional discussion, Representative Sherrod.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier?
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Any advice, Mr. Speaker? Any advice?
He does.
Oh, I do.
I'd like to ask the good representative or the falling star from the Christmas Tree District why he was chosen to carry this bill, Brain Injury Awareness Month.
Thank you for that question, representative from the very jealous district on the Santa Ana. In addition to the reasons that I've already mentioned, I'm the chair's favorite.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Gilliam, do you wish to close?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In all seriousness, watch for next March. This is a very important thing for us to be aware of. Perhaps the most eloquent speaker was Representative Boone. This is a serious problem, and I look forward to the passage of this measure. Thank you.
Those who are in support of the resolution being adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. All have voted. Senate Joint Resolution 21, having received a constitutional majority, is declared adopted. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 78 relating to election. Senate Bill 154 relating to landlord-tenant law. Senate Bill 183 relating to reinsurance program for medical professional liability insurance policies provided by State Accident Insurance Medical Corporation declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 296 relating to controlled substances. Senate Bill 506 relating to direct medical sequel of accepted conditions of workers' compensation claims. Senate Bill 595 relating to insurance. Senate Bill 823 relating to development along Oregon Trail and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 1042 relating to siting of casino and declaring an emergency.
Bills read first time or passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 79 relating to records of disability electors. Senate Bill 112 relating to subpoenas and criminal actions. Senate Bill 384 relating to school administration to go into emergency. Senate Bill 413 relating to Department of Human Services report on foster care placements.
Bills read second time or passed the third reading?
Another one. I don't know what this is. Okay.
Senate Bill 838 relating to electricity and declaring an emergency.
Bills read second time or passed the third reading? Third reading of Senate bills. Clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 202 relating to farm labor contractor duties.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 202. Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I bring you Senate Bill 202, which comes to you from the House Committee on Business and Labor with a unanimous vote with one member excused. And the bill does one simple thing. It simply requires all farm labor contractors to have workers' compensation insurance on their employees. Right now, this is a somewhat complicated situation in that the law does require both farm and forest contractors to provide workers' compensation insurance, but proof of coverage is only a precondition of licensing for forest contractors. So Senate Bill 202 simply provides that farm labor contractors of all types be held to the same standard. Senate Bill 202, in an unusual move, passed the full Senate this session on a unanimous 27-0 vote. We haven't seen that too many times. And a previous version of the bill passed the full Senate in the 2005 session. With your yes vote today, we can enact this simple change that will make the playing field a bit more level for both contractors and workers in Oregon. It is the job of the Bureau of Labor and Industries to help ensure safe workplaces and safeguards for workers. They will be able to serve that goal more effectively if licensing of both farm and forest labor contractors depends on proof of workers' compensation insurance. Furthermore, there's no reason for a labor contractor to operate even for a brief period of time without workers' compensation coverage, thus risking that people will get hurt and there will not be coverage for those injuries. So we will be able to help bully better do their job without creating any new requirements for employers. The bill has the support of the Management Labor Advisory Committee, and both the Bureau of Labor and Industries and the Workers' Compensation Division are prepared with administrative rules to smoothly implement this legislation. Senate Bill 202 really merits your support, and I would urge your aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative, do you wish to close? She does not. Those opinion that the Senate Bill 202 should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kennan, how do you vote? He votes aye. Representative Butler votes aye. Representative Wisnett votes no. Senate Bill 202, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next. Representative Minnis, for what purpose do you ask?
Sorry, Mr. Speaker, I was trying to get into the queue before you gavel down. I wanted to change my vote from nay to yay.
Representative Hunt.
Mr. Speaker, I request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and Representative Minnis be allowed to change her vote on. Oh, what is this one? Senate Bill 202. The vote will not change the outcome.
Representative Hunt asks for unanimous consent to allow Representative Minnis to change her vote on Senate Bill 202. Is there an objection? Hearing none, please go ahead. Representative Minnis votes aye. Clerk, read the next bill.
Senate Bill 203, relating to farm labor contractors.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 203. Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's me again. And this time I'm bringing you Senate Bill 203, which also comes to you from your House Committee on Business and Labor with a unanimous vote with one member excused. Senate Bill 203 will increase the minimum amount of damages recoverable from a farm or forest labor contractor from $500 to $2,000. Anyone who contracts or seeks to contract or who recruits or supplies labor for the production of farm crops or reforestation of land must apply for a farm and forest labor contractor license. That is the current law. This licensing is intended to protect both the farmers and the workers. It makes the contractors accountable for providing the compensation promised to the workers, and it allows farmers to know that the contractors they utilize are operating within the law and carrying proper insurance coverage. Senate Bill 203 will deter contractors from operating improperly or without a license. By increasing the minimum amount of damages recoverable, as I said earlier, from $500 to $2,000, when a contractor commits one of the following violations of the existing farm and forest labor contractor law, and these violations would be acting as an unlicensed contractor, failing to provide certified payroll records as required, failing to provide workers' compensation insurance, as was addressed in the previous bill, or assisting an unlicensed person to act in violation of the farm and forest labor contractor law. In many instances in which a worker is harmed by such violations, it is not possible to prove the exact dollar amount of the damages. In those situations, current law caps the recovery at $500. In testimony before the Business and Labor Committee, Labor Commissioner Dan Gardner reported that, according to conversations with attorneys for both farm workers and the contractors themselves, $500 is simply not a sufficient amount to discourage future violations. In addition to increasing the fine to $2,000, Senate Bill 203 will also extend liability under this law to farm labor contractors as well. It's worth noting that the damages do not apply to farmers who are exempt under the provisions of the farm labor contracting law. This bill passed the Senate overwhelmingly on a 27-1 vote with broad bipartisan support. I hope that we can give it the same support here, and I urge your aye vote on Senate Bill 203. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative, do you wish to close? She does not. Those opinion that Senate Bill 203 should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilman, how do you vote? Representative Gilman? Representative Gilman is off the floor. Senate Bill 203, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
Senate Bill 265, relating to reporting to Department of Human Services regarding psychiatric treatment methods.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 265A. Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 265A directs the Department of Human Services to adopt rules requiring facilities providing mental health services to make quarterly reports to the department regarding the number of incidents involving restraints or seclusion. Currently, health facilities that provide mental health services are not required to report the number of incidents involving the use of restraints or seclusion of patients receiving mental health services. Several questions arise out of this bill. The first is, what facilities will need to report? Facilities such as the state mental hospital, community hospitals, residential facilities, detox facilities, day treatment facilities, or other facilities that treat civilly committed mentally ill persons. Non-hospital facilities that are approved by DHS to provide adequate security, psychiatric, nursing, and other services to persons held pending civil commitment, and facilities providing intensive mental health treatment to services to individuals under 21 years of age. Second, what facilities are not intended to report under this bill? Well, AFSCME Council 75 had concerns that either the Oregon Youth Authority or the Oregon Department of Corrections might be included in the reporting requirement. I'm here to place on the record that this is neither intended nor suggested that either be included in the reporting requirement. Third question, public disclosure of information requiring restraints or seclusion? Well, in the aggregate, yes. This means that the public will have access to the data statewide, but not by individual institution or facility, let alone by individual patient. And lastly, so what will the department do with this information? This is a good question. I'm not sure what they will do with the data. One thing I do know, if Facility A and Facility B have the same type of patient population, and Facility A is 10 times more likely to use restraints than Facility B, then we will be back here next session looking at additional bills that will get to the bottom of why this is the case. Senate Bill 265A is a good bill. It is not something that these facilities should not already be doing, and this bill is truly in the public interest, and I urge your support.
Further discussion, Representative Jensen.
Question of the carrier.
Yes, I yield.
Question of the carrier. Does carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. Was there any, in light of the fact that the largest probably the largest single mental health delivery system in the state right now is the Corrections Department. Is there any reason why they are excluded from this bill?
The question that was addressed in committee was that the Department of Corrections and the Oregon Youth Authority are not mental treatment facilities, and this bill is specifically designed to address mental treatment facilities. Now, there is no doubt that we have a significant population of inmates and young people that are in these facilities that do have these types of conditions, but they are not there for treatment. They are there for incarceration.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you very much for the explanation, Representative, and I'm not in opposition to this bill. I would support the bill and encourage others to, but I think this does raise, anytime these questions come up, the question of treating mental illness in our state prisons.
and there is a disproportionately large group of people in prison who have mental illness, and it can be argued, I think, that in many cases the reason they're in prison is because of their mental illness, which has led them to commit otherwise crimes that are punishable by incarceration. So I think this body needs to be aware of and continue to be aware of that issue. And with that, I would encourage your support of this particular motion.
Further discussion? Representative Kremel. He is out of the queue now. Further discussion? Representative Maurer, do you wish to close?
One last thought. I want to appreciate my colleague from District 58, Land of the Loaves and Fishes, for his kind words about this bill. And there is an issue in our incarceration facilities about mental health patients. And in many cases, they do not belong in those facilities. But that is a larger question that we need to address in this state, and it is something that this body should be looking at, not only today, but into the future. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Dingfelter, how do you vote? Representative Dingfelter votes aye. Senate Bill 265A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 380, relating to school employees and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 380. Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Senate Bill 380 comes to you from the Judiciary Committee by unanimous vote. Existing law requires a school district to provide to the Department of Human Services, the Teacher Standards and Practice Commission, or another school district the records of investigations of suspected child abuse by current school employees. Senate Bill 380 simply includes former employees as well. If a former school employee is convicted of a crime listed in RS 342.143, the education provider that was the employer of the former employee when the crime was committed shall disclose the disciplinary record of the former employee to any person upon request. The criminal record is already a public record. This just adds the former employee part to the bill. Good bill. Urge your support.
Further discussion? Representative Krieger, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Cameron, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Patty Smith, how do you vote? Representative Patty Smith, off the floor. Senate Bill 380, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 403, relating to meal periods for tipped employees.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 403A. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, under Oregon law, an adult employee who has worked a period of 8 hours must receive at least a 30-minute unpaid meal period and two paid 10-minute rest breaks. Breaks, the lunch break, is required even though the employee may not want to take it, because most of the time, the lunchtime is in the middle of the shift. The Bureau of Labor and Industry has received petitions from dozens of restaurant workers who would like the ability, I repeat, would like the ability to waive their meal periods. There are a variety of reasons of why a server would want to skip the mandatory break, such as when the break coincides with the restaurant's busiest time of the day. For a server earning tips, the middle of the shift may be the time that represents the best opportunity for they as an individual to earn a tip income. Senate Bill 403 directs BOLI to adopt rules which would allow tipped restaurant employees to voluntarily waive meal periods and prevent employers from coercing them into waiving a meal period. Employers cannot use the waiver to be mandatory or as a condition of employment and can be assessed a civil penalty if they do so. As a precautionary measure, the measure has a sunset of January 2, 2012, which allows BOLI and stakeholders to look at the bill's effectiveness and determine whether to allow the waiver to continue. The measure has no known opposition and passed unanimously out of the Business and Labor Committee. I urge your yes vote.
Further discussion? Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise in support of this bill today, and being a restaurateur who used to have direct tipped employees, we heard the word coerced used in the opening speech, and I want to tell you, I literally had to coerce employees to take breaks. This is an issue to servers that their livelihood impacts. A half hour off of a restaurant floor, as you well know, when you go into a restaurant and how much you leave in tip, just count the tables that those people are making, and anywhere from $17 to $25 to $50 an hour. And if they're off the floor for a half hour, it directly impacts their income. On the flip side of that, any server that still wants to take a break, a good employer is going to honor that, and the rules and the penalties in this bill will protect those employees from abuse. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Kremel.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I have a question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, I would.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. I'm confused because in Section 1, we're amending ORS 653.261. And we're inserting the language about the commissioner being able to adopt the rules regarding meal periods and so on and so forth. Then in Section 2, we're amending ORS 653.261, and we're taking out all of the language that appears to be being inserted in Section 1. Can you help me understand, are we putting the language in or are we taking the language out?
Well, it may be a fix by LC in order to make this work and allow BOLI the opportunity to set and establish a policy, which in turn is a voluntary situation, and maybe they need to make those corrections in those two specific statutes in order to have a vehicle to achieve this.
Representative Kremel?
Okay.
Additional question?
Additional question.
Additional question. Does the carrier yield?
I shall.
Okay.
He does.
There's a thank you, Madam Speaker and Representative. There's a sunset of January 2, 2012. Is there a reason why we're putting a sunset on this particular statute?
I believe I outlined in my opening remarks that it was to see how it would work.
Representative Kremel? Thank you. Further discussion? Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I yield.
He does.
This is the first, Representative Escobar. I apologize for not asking you first, but just a quick question. Does this apply to any other positions also? For example, animal shelter workers, et cetera. I just picked that one. But do you know?
To my knowledge, no. It's tipped wage earners, and we were specifically speaking of the restaurant entity.
Okay.
I don't know how those people are paid, so I can't answer that.
Okay, thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill, please.
To the bill.
Yes, this bill came from the Business and Labor Committee, which I am proud to be the chair of. And there was, when the advocate proponent of the bill came to speak to it, I made it very clear. I wanted to know exactly why this labor, meaning me, should allow people not to be able to take their scheduled meal times. And it was made very clear to me that the workers themselves want this bill because the lunch hour is the busiest time, or the dinner hour, and that's when they a lot of these folks get paid minimum wage, and the tips are the greatest at the highest levels during this time. I was a bartender in college. I waited tables. I bused tables. I was a line cook. I was a prep cook. I cleaned out more bathrooms than you can imagine. Look, these folks, these workers want this bill to pass. There was virtually no one in the hearing room in opposition to this at all, including my good friends, our good friends in labor. This is a good bill. I urge your aye vote. Thank you very much.
Further discussion? Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I just wish to declare a potential conflict of interest in that I have restaurants that could potentially have direct tipped employees.
Representative Cameron declares a potential conflict of interest. It shall be noted for the record. Further discussion, Representative Schaffler.
I need to declare a conflict of interest, ma'am.
Please state your conflict.
Well, someday when I leave this place, I might be able to get a job that actually pays me a living wage, and I may go back to tending bar. So thank you very much.
Representative Schaffler, that conflict will not be noted.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Escobar, do you wish to close?
That's a hard act to follow. Thank you, Madam Speaker. Voluntary. Brought by the workers. They would like to have it. We need to provide the vehicle. I urge your yes vote.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Barker, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Greenlick, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Kamp, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Bill 403A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 417, relating to boundary commissions and appropriated money.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 417A. Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Senate Bill 417A comes to you from your Committee on Government Accountability and Information Technology, where it received a unanimous due pass recommendation. It was passed out of the Senate on a 28-1 vote. This bill abolishes the Lane County Boundary Commission, the only commission of its kind in the state. Last session, a similar bill drew support from 11 of 12 Lane County cities, and only Eugene expressed concerns. This session, Eugene has taken a neutral position and, in fact, was a part of the work group that was commissioned to work out the details of this bill. Also, on that work group were representatives from the Lane County Board of Commissioners, the League of Oregon Cities, the mayor of Cottage Grove, and a citizen representative from the River Road Santa Clara Property Owners Association. This bill represents a unanimous consensus of that work group. The Boundary Commission is comprised of 7 members appointed by the governor. Senate Bill 417A will turn the duties of the Boundary Commission back over to the cities and the county. Senate Bill 417A eliminates an extra layer of government, restores local electoral accountability to local boundary decisions, and brings Lane County into the 21st century with regard to these government processes. Again, it passed the Senate 28-1, the Government Accountability Committee unanimously, and was crafted with a smooth transition in mind for the local entities it will affect. I urge your support for this bill.
Further discussion? Representative Nathanson.
To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I will be voting for this. I'm pleased to join the good representative and appreciate hearing the background information on the support that was gained through the work group working on this. I did want to add a few comments, though. Even though I support this because it's at the request of the interested parties and it seems like it's a good solution, I did want to point out that no matter who makes these decisions, whether it's a boundary commission or a board of county commissioners or a city council, no matter who makes the decision, they are going to have to apply the same set of rules and the same laws. They have to apply it fairly. No one can vary from that. This is one of those instances where I hope that the parties who are requesting this are satisfied with the results, because sometimes you need to be careful what you ask for. In these times when counties are so strapped for money and there is sometimes very little staff to deal with the many issues that need to be dealt with, planning for the orderly extension of services, whether it's streets, sewers, water, power lines, how things work for residents, I hope that the people in those affected areas can receive the same good and careful analysis and assistance from whoever is making the decision in the future, as opposed to the great amount of attention they receive now from the Boundary Commission. But despite all that, I hope everything works out all right, and I'm going to vote yes. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I appreciate the comments from good representative from North Eugene, because those, of course, are always appropriate when making this kind of change. I would simply like to report to the House that in my district there are several small municipalities that do a tremendous job of dealing with the ever-growing bureaucracy that they have to face in order to do their ordinary city business. This is an important bill for at least a couple of those municipalities. I would urge an aye vote on this bill. It reduces a layer of government that it turns out we no longer need. I think that the caveats of the good representative from North Eugene are important, but we believe that this will work out well. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Chris Edwards, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Burley, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Bill 417A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 516, relating to sanitary districts.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 516. Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Senate Bill 516 allows an owner of land in a sanitary district to serve as a member of the governing board for the district. Is this a new practice for this type of governing board? And the answer is simple, no. This type of provision exists in drainage districts, water improvement districts, water control districts and rural fire protection districts. Good bill, should pass.
Further discussion? Representative Maurer, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Dingfelder, how do you vote?
Aye.
Votes aye. Representative Berger, votes aye. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Thatcher, votes aye. Senate Bill 516, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 553, related to sentencing guidelines.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 553. Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 553, as you can see from looking at it, is a bill with few words but many numbers. This bill was brought to the Judiciary Committee by the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission. It passed the Senate with 25 aye votes. There were 5 members excused. What this does is the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission, pursuant to its statutory duty, reviews all of the legislation that's passed in a session that creates new crimes or modifies existing crimes. Then what they do is they conform the Oregon administrative rules to reflect the changes made by the legislature. And what happens is their changes are referred to the legislature. If we don't pass these, they sunset. So, colleagues, this is simply a conforming bill that adopts the changes made to the Oregon administrative rules by the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission. I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Bonamici, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Madam Speaker.
She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. All members have voted. Senate Bill 553, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 615, relating to boundary changes within metropolitan service districts.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 615. Representative Girard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As always, I'll try to make this as brief as possible. This is a super good bill. It passed the Senate 28-0, and it passed the Gate Committee 5-0. What happened in 1997, the legislature created a body called the Contested Case Appeal Board, of which was a body to for cities, counties, and special districts to appeal land use decisions of Metro. The problem is LUBA now has decided that that is a process that they have to go through first before they appeal to LUBA. So instead of being something good, it turned out to be something not so good. So this removes the contested case appeals, and it simplifies, so it's removing a layer of government. Like I said, it had unanimous support. There was no opposition. Good bill.
Further discussion? Representative Girard, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Madam Speaker.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Tomei, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Gelster, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Barker, votes aye. Senate Bill 615, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 773, relating to conflicts between provisions applicable to metropolitan service districts.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 773. Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Senate Bill 773 comes to you from your Committee on Government Accountability and Information Technology. This bill is purely a housekeeping bill that cleans up some ambiguity about the application of certain statutes to Metro, which is the only metropolitan service district in the state of Oregon. The history is that Metro used to be a service district governed by ORS Chapter 198, just like a fire district, a water district, or a public transit district. Metro's authority at this time was derived solely from the statutes. In 1992, the voters in the Portland region adopted the Metro Charter, which established Metro as a home rule government with authority to act on matters of metropolitan concern. After that, the legislature amended ORS Chapter 268 specifically in order to conform ORS Chapters 268 and other state laws to the 1992 Metro Charter. The problem is that while ORS 268 and the Metro Charter now provide rules that Metro must follow for most of the issues addressed in ORS Chapter 198, Metro remains defined in ORS 198 as a special district. Senate Bill 773 simply eliminates confusing references to metropolitan service districts in ORS Chapter 198. Let me emphasize that the bill does not give Metro any additional authority. It simply clarifies current law by eliminating conflictive and duplicative statutes. This bill came over from the Senate with 25 votes, and no one testified against the bill in committee. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Gerard.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. If you check the summary, you'll see that I voted no in committee. My concerns have been addressed, and this is a good bill.
Further discussion? Representative Edwards, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Butler, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Minnis, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Greg Smith, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Bill 773, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 5547, related to State Financial Administration, appropriating money and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 5547A. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Senate Bill 5547, as amended, implements the Department of Human Services rebalance plan for the 2005-07 biennium. Rebalance plans allowed Department of Human Services to shift general funds and other and federal funds expenditure limitation as budget needs change over the course of the biennium because of caseload changes, cost shifts, revenue issues, or management actions. The bill as amended adds $9,415,687 in general fund and $7,364,193 other funds to keep DHS's budget in balance for the 2005-07 biennium. This includes $300,000 general fund dollars added by Human Services Subcommittee for Family Planning Services, and the bill also disappropriates $9,861,271 remaining in the $83.3 million special purpose appropriation made during the April 2006 special session for DHS caseloads, cost per case, and program needs. The most significant general fund adjustment in the rebalance plan reflect an overall $36.3 million general fund savings from caseload and cost per case in self-sufficiency and child welfare programs, the Oregon Health Plan, and home care for seniors and people with disabilities, which are all lower than previously forecast. Note that that was a $36.3 million savings. Also, $24 million in general fund needed to meet federal temporary assistance to needy families, or TANF, maintenance of effort requirements for federal fiscal year 2007. Due to uncertainty around the maintenance of effort issue and its potential impact on the 2007-09 budget, the budget report includes a budget note directing DHS to report to the on the status of the maintenance of effort requirement and available TANF funds after it closes out the 2005-07 budget. $9.2 million general fund to cover higher costs for staff, pharmaceuticals, and contracted medical professionals at the Oregon State Hospital and the Eastern Oregon Psychiatric Center. General fund added to backfill a net $7.7 million shortfall in other and federal funds revenues, including adjustments in the department's federal cost allocation plan. $3.9 million in general fund in increased costs related to the state data center, and $2 million in general fund to offset budget savings expected from House Bill 3108's reduction of certain Oregon Health Plan benefits, which DHS did not reduce by direction of legislative leadership. Department of Human Services reported on its actions during the interim to improve its financial operations and fiscal accountability, which included periodic caseload forecast review meetings with legislators. Department of Human Services was directed to reinstate those meetings during the 2007-09 interim. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of Senate Bill 5547 as amended.
Further discussion? Representative Boone, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
She does. Representative Tomei, did you wish to discuss this bill?
Yes, please.
Okay. Just a moment, Representative Boone. And Representative Tomei, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Boone, I'm so sorry that I did not get this question to you sooner.
Question of the carrier? Does
yes,
the carrier
thank
yield?
You, Madam Chair.
Do you does yield? The carrier yield?
Oh, yes, of course.
She does.
Thank you, Representative. Representative, in looking this over, I don't see any reference in this bill to the gambling addiction funds, the funds, the 1% of the lottery fund that would go to gambling addiction.
Just one second, please.
Thank you.
Representative Tomei, it didn't change. This is the current rebalance language.
Follow up?
Additional question? Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
She does.
Thank you. I just want to make sure that the full 1% of lottery money is going to the gambling addiction fund, the full 1%.
Just one second.
I know.
The full 1% of revenue goes to them, but they're authorized to spend $9.1 million.
Follow up?
Additional question? Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
She does.
Is that $9.1 million 1% of the lottery funds?
No, it is not.
let's see if I can remember everything she said. They will have a carryover to the 2007-09 budget, and then they'll be authorized, and that will bring it up to the full 1%.
Follow-up? Additional question or
additional
clarification?
Additional question?
Yes.
Does the yield? She does.
Yes.
So I'm understanding you correctly, Representative. So the full 1%, even though it will not be allocated to be spent in this biennium, what is left over from that 1% will carry over into the 07-09 biennium. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, I do.
She does.
Thank you, good representative. Last interim, I participated, and many of the members of this chamber participated in the review of the DHS caseload problem. Can you assure me that this caseload forecast has had input from the regional areas of the state, and that you're comfortable with this forecast, that we will not be looking at another $100 million plus shortfall in the near future?
Just one second. Representative from beautiful Bend area. The message is that they did meet, and it can't be guaranteed what will happen with caseloads. They may change, they may go up or down, so there's no guarantee, but I think they did consider all areas of the state. Is that what you're asking?
Question of the Ways and Means co-chair, Mr. Speaker.
Question of Representative Nolan. Do you yield?
I'll yield, but I don't promise I have all my wisdom here on the floor with me.
Well,
she does.
Good colleague, thank you for trying to answer. I mean, this was a major problem that this body faced during the interim. We didn't have enough money in the emergency fund to carry over. Like I said, I spent many days driving over, participating in reviews, looking at the DHS forecast system, and I think before we go forward with this budget, we should have some confidence that we're not in 6 months going to be looking at another $100 million shortfall. Has the DHS presenters, the agency, assured you that this number is good, or is this a number that we're using to balance the budget and know that in 6 months we're going to be $100 or $200 million short again?
Thank you, good representative, for that question. The proposed regional system that you talk about is something that is a new proposal in a policy option package which is currently being considered by the DHS, by the Human Services Subcommittee in the context of the DHS budget for the next year. The new system has been recommended, but it has not been funded in the current budget and hasn't been implemented yet. But we certainly hope to implement it and be able to give you that assurance as we implement it.
Thank you. Madam Speaker, to the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I hope that the Ways and Means process and DHS have done a better job. We, like I said, spent a lot of time and effort to come up with proposals to be sure that we don't have this. And colleagues, this has not been a one-session problem. It's a continuous problem. And to be honest with you, I think that in the past we've underestimated the caseload to be sure the budget balances. And then we have to come back and look at the emergency funding or look at new revenue to try to balance the budget. Not participating this session in the Ways and Means process, I hope the Ways and Means process has looked at this and it is a good forecast. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Boone, do you wish to close?
Just briefly, Madam Speaker. I just wanted to say that they have, just to assure the representative from the beautiful Bend area, and I'm just making up that title because I can't see your title. There was quite a bit of work done on the forecasting, and they did come in, DHS did come in within the money that was appropriated to them in the special session in 2006. And, you know, as we said before, caseloads vary depending on several issues, and one of the things that we've been working on in this building over the last two sessions is the meth problem, and that had a big impact on it, which for all kinds of areas of DHS services. So hopefully, you know, we're seeing them coming through this. They've made a huge, huge step forward, and although we can't guarantee anything like that, we're very hopeful that this is on a step in the right direction, and what they're doing right now is working for us. So I urge your support of this budget. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Votes aye. All members have voted. Senate Bill 5547A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 64, relating to exemption of investment records from disclosure.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 64. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Senate Bill 64 is an important piece of technical legislation that will allow the State Treasurer, the Oregon Growth Account Board, and the Oregon Investment Council to keep some information private for the purpose of maintaining the secrets of the growth organizations with which they work. These are business organizations which are working with venture capital and are very concerned about keeping their business secrets in order to allow the small businesses that they're working with to grow. The language is needed in order to allow the state to consider whether or not to invest in these highly leveraged growth funds. And it involves only a very small portion of the state's investment income based on policies adopted by this legislature. The specific language of this bill is becoming the industry standard, language taken from the California law, essentially, and will allow the treasurer and the other organizations that I noted to continue to be involved in evaluating and determining investments in these funds. I urge an aye vote on Senate Bill 64.
Further discussion? Representative Barnhart, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Dingfelder, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Bonamici, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Bill 64, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 65, relating to authority of Attorney General to represent parties in class action.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 65. Representative Minnis, just a moment, Representative Bonamici. Representative Minnis, you, for what purpose do you rise?
Madam Speaker, I request unanimous consent to temporary return to the order of courtesies.
Representative Minnis requests unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies. Is there objection? Seeing none, please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, and I want to thank the body for its indulgence. Colleagues, please join me in welcoming Kim Grove, Lillian Knapp. They're sitting right up here in the upper gallery. Jennifer Watson and Tracy, and they've brought with them 15 homeschooled young men and women. If you all will stand so we can see you. Welcome today. I understand they brought me a great homemade apple pie I'm looking forward to. And they're with the Home Education Freedom Works. So welcome today, and I hope your experience here is great. We're glad to have you. Thank you.
Welcome to the Capitol. Further courtesies, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, on the side aisle is Dan Norris, my friend from Malheur County. He's the district attorney there, and the really, really good news is he didn't bring a warrant for my arrest with him today.
We're glad to hear that, Representative. Welcome to the Capitol. Further courtesies. The clerk will read the bill again, please.
Senate Bill 65, relating to authority of Attorney General to represent parties in class actions.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 65. Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 65 came from us from the Office of the State Treasurer. And it makes a narrow change in our Oregon law that would allow the Oregon Public Employees Retirement Fund, upon appointment by the court, to serve as a lead plaintiff in a class action securities fraud case. As a state entity, the OPERF, the Oregon Public Employees Retirement Fund, is represented by the Attorney General. Currently, the law is interpreted to prevent the Attorney General from representing other members in a class. So this bill would create a narrow exception only for securities class actions. OPERF regularly participates in federal securities class action lawsuits when it has suffered losses due to fraud or other security violations. For those class actions, the court appoints a lead plaintiff to represent members of the class. Pension funds from other states, including California, New York, Wisconsin, Utah, Minnesota, and Florida, have all served as lead plaintiffs in securities fraud class actions. Oregon should be able to join those states in taking the lead to enforce securities laws and keep our national securities markets free from fraud. OPERF is one of the largest public institutional investors in the nation, and in some cases may be best suited to perform the role of lead plaintiff to maximize recovery for the class. This bill has the potential to benefit Oregon consumers, retirees, and taxpayers, as well as the Oregon Public Employees Retirement Fund. Our state could be in a better position to negotiate and monitor attorney's fees, to oversee settlement discussions and case strategy, and to negotiate other remedies that would benefit the market, such as corporate governance changes. And although Oregon currently has the ability to opt out of these class actions and seek a separate recourse, the state should have the flexibility to act as lead plaintiff in a case if the circumstances warrant and the court appoints. And colleagues, I just want to add that in this type of class action case, being lead plaintiff helps with negotiating strategy and sort of setting the course for the litigation. This is a narrow bill that will help our state in those certain circumstances by clarifying that our state can take a lead role in a case in which they're involved anyway. So I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Kremmel.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question of the carrier?
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, I will.
She
yield.
Does.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Madam Speaker. Just out of curiosity, is there someone that the AG is considering a lawsuit against currently?
Not to my knowledge, Representative. I don't think this has any particular lawsuit in mind. You know that our retirement fund is one of the largest in the country, and when there are securities laws violations, I know the word Enron came up in our committee meeting, the state can get involved in those class actions to try to remedy the fraud in the marketplace. This bill would simply allow our state to take one of the lead plaintiff roles rather than being a simple member of the class, and it, as I explained, it helps with strategy and negotiation to be in the lead plaintiff role.
Thank you. Further question?
Additional question. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, I will yield.
She does.
Thank you, Representative. On the front page, line 29, it says, even if one or more members are persons that the Attorney General may not otherwise represent or advise pursuant to this section, I'm wondering if that isn't becoming rather broad in terms of who the Attorney General is going to be extending legal services to from a standpoint of the class action suit that might be involved.
Representative, it's my understanding that this is a narrowly drafted. It only applies to securities class actions, and it's intended, is my understanding that it's intended in case the question comes up about representing other members of the class. In case the lead plaintiff role is challenged as if the Attorney General is not said to have responsibility or authority to represent the other members of the class. This is a narrow bill to allow the Attorney General to serve in that lead plaintiff class action when they're already involved in the litigation.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Bonamici, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Madam Speaker.
She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Buckley, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative McPherson, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Bill 65, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 66, relating to administration of public funds, appropriated money, declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 66A. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 66A comes to you from your Revenue Committee with a unanimous do-pass recommendation after passing the Senate unanimously. 66A is a housekeeping bill that makes some technical finance changes and then restores the constitutional balance of power of elected statewide officials, something I think is somewhat important. The technical changes include removing interest-bearing accounts that were incorrectly established in the general fund. Currently, these accounts require special handling in how the Treasurer's Office accounts for and reports transactions within the general fund. These changes will have no substantive impact on these accounts or the associated programs. All agencies responsible for these accounts have been contacted and have no concern with the changes. Basically, it codifies and simplifies that these are interest-bearing accounts. It does not take any money away from any general fund program. They are currently doing it, but the statutes are not real clear, and this codifies as it makes it real clear that that is the way they are to handle those specific funds. Senate Bill 66A also codifies current practice and only makes legislative intent clear that only accounts created with investment language be invested as opposed to simply interest-bearing. In other words, if legislature says it's an investment account, then this codifies that it has to be invested. One section of 66A is specific and it allows the investment of monies in Community Housing Trust account, which is set up as an endowment with funds from the damaged hospital sale. And it specifies that agency operations are not allowed to be taken from these funds. It is an endowment. Senate Bill 66A also restores an aspect of the constitutional balance of power among the three statewide elected offices, the governor, secretary of state, and state treasurer, that had existed since statehood until the 2005 session. In 2005, in a last-minute bill, a bill was passed that changed the definition of state agency that placed the state treasurer and the secretary of state under the governor's office and DAS for budget purposes. For some reason, the secretary of state and the treasurer were not happy with that change, and the motivation at the time was to simplify the budget process. However, there are some constitutional issues, and Senate Bill 66A restores the elected offices from the structure of the office of the governor, the governor's budget, and restores them to their independent status in budgeting. It's a good bill, clarifies some things, will help us in our transactions. I urge and I vote.
Further discussion, Representative Kremel.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I just wanted to clarify something on the record. There was a question about how this bill would affect the Damish trust fund monies that are part of the mental health housing trust fund. There is another bill working its way through the system that is currently in Ways and Means and hopefully will come out soon that segregates those funds for the purposes of making sure that there is housing and money for housing for the chronically mentally ill, which was the purpose of the proceeds from the damaged sale several years ago and the redevelopment of that property. We had it clarified on the record that in committee, and I just wanted to clarify for the record here, that this bill does not affect House Bill 3016 and what is intended with that. This bill only will allow for all of the funds, including the damage funds, when they are invested, to be invested at the highest rate. And I just wanted to make sure that that was on the record so that folks didn't think, especially our NAMI friends out there that were concerned about 3016, didn't think that this was going to have a negative or deleterious effect on that bill and those monies. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Brueger, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Madam.
She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Okay. All members have voted. Senate Bill 66A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. And members, let me take this opportunity to let you know that we had made a bill or a resolution, a special order of business for 11:30 a.m. The person who's honored by that resolution is still on her way here, and she is 90 years old, and so we want to wait until she gets here. This would also be a good opportunity to recognize someone else who has served this body for over 110 years, and yet, remarkably, is only 21 years old, and that's Evie, who sits out and admirably guards our chamber. So we wish her all the best, and are very glad that she's out there. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 74, relating to elections conducted at polling places.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 74A. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, in case it didn't catch your attention, Oregonians vote by mail in all elections. Beginning in 1981, the Oregon legislature approved a test of vote by mail for local elections. Then in November 1998, Oregon voters expanded vote by mail to primary and general elections by a vote of nearly 2-1. As a result, the last polling place election held in Oregon was the November 1998 general election. However, we have a number of places in statute that refer to polling places and other things such as punch card ballots. The good representative from the Ontario area can describe IBM punch cards in great detail to you if you want to know what they are, to the younger members. Terms such as punch, ballot label, ballot stub are no longer relevant. The term poll book is obsolete. Election boards are no longer used. The term polls, applicable only to polling places, is no longer applicable to Oregon elections. Senate Bill 74A is a cleanup bill to take these words out of our elections because they are no longer relevant. Good bill. Please vote aye.
Further discussion? Representative Berger, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will say aye. Those opposed will say no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Barker, how do you vote?
Aye.
He votes aye. Representative Hanna, how do you vote? He votes aye. Representative Tomei, how do you vote? She votes aye. Senate Bill 74A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the bill. Senate Bill 124, relating to ballot titles. The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 124A. Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I bring you Senate Bill 124A from your House Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules, from where it passed unanimously. And this bill comes to us from the Attorney General's office. It's a pretty simple bill. It allows the Attorney General to simply correct clerical errors in draft or certified ballot titles that have been prepared by the Attorney General for state initiative petitions and referendum measures. The bill is needed because on occasion the Department of Justice has certified a ballot title that included a typographical or clerical error. Under current law, the only way in which such an error can be corrected is if a participant in the ballot title proceeding seeks review of the ballot title by the Oregon Supreme Court. If no one has appealed the ballot title, then the error must go uncorrected. If review is sought, then the Attorney General can concede error and have the ballot title remanded for redrafting. This process is cumbersome and costly and leaves some errors in ballot titles uncorrected. While such errors occur only in a few cases each election cycle, when they do occur, it is problematic. This proposal will provide an efficient and less costly way for such errors to be corrected. Senate Bill 124, as amended, will allow the Attorney General to correct errors only in very limited circumstances. The only type of error that can be corrected under this proposal is a typographical, arithmetical, or grammatical error or omission that is evident from the text of the draft or certified ballot title, or such an error that is made evident by comparison of the text of the ballot title with a written explanation provided by the Attorney General and issued concurrently with the ballot title. This proposal, as you can tell, is very narrowly circumscribed. It is, however, an important change because it will help the Attorney General's office ensure that accurate ballot titles are issued for use in signature gathering and the election process. Senate Bill 124 is a bill that we need. It should be non-controversial. It passed our committee unanimously, and I would urge you to vote for it as well. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Rosenbaum, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Dingfelder,
aye.
How do you vote?
Aye.
She votes aye. Representative Comp, how do you vote? She votes aye. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? He votes no. Representative McPherson votes aye.
Sorry about that.
Senate Bill 124, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 171, relating to property tax returns.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 171. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senate Bill 171 is a very simple bill that will allow an assessor to forward a business property tax return to another county. There have been a number of instances in which multiple county businesses have filed the tax return in the wrong place. The problem now is that these returns are confidential, and they cannot be forwarded, so that the assessor ends up returning the return to the business. If it was filed exactly on time, it is now late in the new county. Colleagues, this simply allows the assessor to pass along the return to the correct county, and the current custom is in situations of this sort that the return would be considered on time. Good bill should pass.
Further discussion? Hearing none. Representative Barnhart, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Flores, how do you vote? Off the floor. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Off the floor. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? She votes aye. Senate Bill 171, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 236, relating to brands and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 236A. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. 236A, brought to you by your Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee, where it passed unanimously with one person absent, creates a voluntary lifetime brand inspection for, this was a hard word, Equidae, that's horses, mules, and donkeys, expands the authority of the Department of Agriculture to collect brand inspection fees, removes brand inspection certification requirements for livestock other than cattle, replaces their fee refund system for fee exemptions for certain cattle transport, and increases the cap of brand inspection on per head, per hide basis, declares an emergency effective upon passage. A lot of different things happened in this bill. There was a work group that took place in which all of the industry was invited to work on this particular bill and to come up with an equitable situation. We started branding in 1894, and then when the Department of Agriculture was established in 1931, it became their preview, and it has been funded by fees. It is today entirely funded by fees. During the testimony, it came forward that the cattlemen were for this bill and others, including the horsemen. The issue is that it is still ongoing. They're still having discussions. And so one of the questions that they was asked of me to ask of the department was that would they continue to work in a cautious manner in the implementation of these fees to make sure that it's appropriate? And also, would they come back in 2009 and give a report of how it's going with industry? They agreed, at which time we got a shaking of heads in the room that they really needed this bill, wanted it to move forward. It's a good bill. It does a lot of important things for the industry, and it continues to fund itself by these fees. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Maurer.
Mr. Speaker, I need to declare a conflict.
State your conflict, please.
Our family buys and sells cattle.
Your conflict is noted for the record. Representative Smith.
I wish to declare a conflict, too, because I raise cattle, and I'm going to have to pay that fee.
Very good. Thank you. So noted. Further discussion? Hearing none, Representative Roblin, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? She votes aye. Representative Crummell, how do you vote? He votes no. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? He votes aye. Senate Bill 236A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Our honored guest has arrived, so we will now move to our special order of business. The clerk will read the resolution.
SCR 8, honoring Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs Elder Gladys Miller Thompson.
The question now arises upon final reading and adoption of SCR 8. Representative Dalian.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to thank the leadership from both parties for their patience as we waited for Gladys Miller Thompson. As a one of the sponsors of Senate concurrent resolution number 8, it is with a great deal of pride that I carry the resolution to you today. And I'd like to thank my colleague, Senator Gordley from the Senate, and my fellow co-signers. I ask you to read the resolution and the SMS so that you might know Gladys Miller Thompson to some degree. I want to tell you what you can't read in those places. In this job as a legislator, on occasion, life appears to run headlong into a piece of legislation that you know and have some contact with. This is one of those times. Through a National Humanities grant a long time ago, I had an opportunity to meet with a linguist, and I was involved with him for just a brief time while he was recording and defining another Native American language. As I read the article last night in the Portland Monthly, the May edition, and I would invite you to read that too. I think you'll find the article moving. It's about Gladys and her granddaughter, Dania Johnson. I was reminded of that experience. Let me tell you just a little bit about the recording and defining of a language. It's a huge job. With just one word, the linguist attempts to find all the definitions that are possible. They attempt to write a spelling that will convey the pronunciation of the word. After that, to define the word, it is heard in as many circumstances and as many contexts as possible. When the word is finally researched, it is used in conversation and then recorded. This gives you some notion of what it takes to record one word in a Native American language. In the terms of the linguist, it takes years. In fact, the fellow I was working with was from Princeton University, and when I say I was working with, I had opportunity to sit beside him for a week. He had been working on a Native American language for 20 years. He had used the research of his fellow researchers that had been working on that language 50 years before. Gladys and her daughter, please stand. And her daughter, Marcia, her granddaughter, Maya, her great-granddaughter, Charisse, and of course, Gladys Miller Thompson. We welcome you to the legislature. Now, as I finish, I probably get a little emotional. I usually don't. Gladys is attempting to do this with the help of her granddaughter and others on the reservation. They have the will. They have the courage. I wish them Godspeed. And I hope that Gladys will hear my words. When the time is right, it will begin. It takes as long as it takes to finish. Thank you, Gladys. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Hearing none, do you wish to close, Representative Dahlin?
No, thank you.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. SCR 8, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Before we take a recess motion, are there any announcements? Representative Hunt?
Democrats will caucus with lunch in just a few minutes.
Representative Scott?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Republicans also grab your lunch and come to the caucus room.
Further announcements? Seeing none, Representative Jensen, 4 p.m. recess motion.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House to stand in recess until 4 p.m. this afternoon.
Representative Jensen moves that the House stand in recess until 4 p.m. this afternoon. Without objection, we stand in recess.